You're listening to the RBN Energy Blogcast. This is an audio version of RBN's Daily Energy Blog, which is a fun and insightful daily commentary on oil, gas, NGL, and refined product markets. Each morning, we cover commodity fundamentals and industry changes to keep you informed of developing trends across the U.S. energy landscape.
Monday, March 23, 2026. The show goes on. Plans for Venezuelan revival might not include its long-neglected refining sector. Published by Jason Lindquist and John Hours. The U.S. and Israeli military strikes against Iran and the unsettled situation in the Middle East have pushed many topics to the background for now. But the energy-related impacts from the U.S.'s decision to remove Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro from power early this year is one topic that won't stay in the shadows for long. Venezuela, estimated to have the world's largest crude oil reserves, was also a major refiner that exported products across the Western Hemisphere before it began a decade-long downturn. In today's RBN blog, we look at the history of Venezuela's refining sector, where things stand today, and the prospects for a turnaround. We have written extensively about the developments in Venezuela over the past several weeks, with our analysis so far focused on crude oil production and other upstream issues. In Take Me Money and Run Venezuela, we began by detailing how the country was once a critical supplier of heavy sour crude to U.S. Gulf Coast refineries, providing more than 1 million barrels per day in the late 1990s and early 2000s, before Venezuelan production entered a long period of decline soon after Maduro's predecessor, Hugo Chavez, came into power in late 1999. Today, the country produces less than 1 million barrels per day of crude oil, barely one quarter of the level it reached in the late 1990s. After our initial blog, we looked more closely at the type of crude Venezuela produces and the potential impact of more barrels hitting the global market. In Orinoco Flow, we said that most of Venezuela's crude oil reserves are located within the 21,000-square-mile Orinoco Belt, which produces a crude that is extra heavy, an API as low as 8 to 14 degrees, so thick that it's difficult to transport and refine. In When Love Comes to Town, we looked at the differences in Venezuelan and Canadian heavy crudes, including production methods, costs, and quality, and how a revival in Venezuelan production could impact the flows and prices of Canadian barrels. As noted in our weekly crude billboard report, the U.S. imported 423,000 barrels per day of Venezuelan crude in the week ended March 13, the highest since December 2024. We capped that series with Round and Round, where we detailed the concrete steps Venezuela could take to boost crude production in the short, medium, and long term. That analysis was included in our first drill down report of 2026, which is available here. Today's blog begins a new series on Venezuela, this one focused on its refining sector, export capabilities and turnaround potential. Just as we did in our initial series, let's start with some background. Venezuela built up the largest refining industry in Latin America during the post-World War II era, and retained that position until Brazil, a country with four times as much fuel demand, passed it in 1980, but it remained a major regional product exporter in the Caribbean, including exports to the U.S., until well into the Chavez years. Venezuela is home to five refineries, including the Paraguana Refining Complex, what was once the largest single-site refining facility in the world, and remains the second largest by rated capacity, all of which have operated far below their full capacity in recent years. Back in the sector's heyday, before Chavez came to power, Venezuelan refinery throughput was consistently around 1 million barrels per day. With its refineries operating at high rates, Venezuela emerged as a major source of refined products, with the U.S. and other Western Hemisphere countries becoming consistent importers of Venezuelan gasoline, middle distillates and other products, particularly fuel oil and asphalt. The performance of Venezuela's refineries showed a noticeable dip in 2002 and 2003, around the time of a major strike against state-run PDVSA, but throughput mostly held steady until the early 2010s, when a sharp decline began. Up until the turn of the century, Venezuela's refineries not only produced a lot of refined products, they were also highly efficient and competitive with facilities anywhere. While U.S. and Canadian refiners were the top performers in 2000 with a utilization rate of more than 90%, Venezuela, Mexico, and the rest of Central and South America were not far behind, with annual utilization rates above 80%, a situation that held through about 2010. But while U.S. and Canadian utilization rates have remained above 80% every year since then, except the pandemic-related dip to 78% in 2020, they have fallen everywhere else. Nowhere more dramatically than in Venezuela, with utilization rates generally below 20% since the late 2010s. To understand the decline in Venezuelan refining over the past decade or so, all that is needed is to understand the situation at three facilities: the Paraguana Refining Center, Amuay and Cardin, and the El Palito and Puerto La Cruz refineries. Together, they represent nearly 99% of Venezuela's domestic refining capacity, with over 70% of that at Paraguaná. Since 2019, the story has been a persistent degradation rather than a clean collapse and restart cycle. Prolonged underinvestment, loss of skilled labor, kickstarted by the exodus of its best employees during the 2002-2003 strike, poor management, corruption, sanctions-related constraints on parts and catalysts, unreliable utilities and repeated unplanned shutdowns. In the early 2020s, the Maduro government undertook a highly publicized effort to repair units at Paraguaná and El Palito, contracting the work to Iran's government-run National Iranian Oil Refining Company, or NIORDC, but little to nothing came of it. Paraguaná, which accounts for about 72% of total domestic capacity, has run intermittently, experiencing numerous casualty events, including a major explosion in 2012 that resulted in at least 48 fatalities, power failures, and key unit breakdowns. El Palito has oscillated between long outages and partial restarts. Puerto La Cruz was formally shut in 2019 and later limped back at low rates. The result is that even in the better recent years, average national refinery throughput in 2022-24 was only 250,000 barrels per day on 1.3 million barrels per day of capacity, or about 19% utilization, which tells you how far the system has drifted from anything resembling normal operations. With the U.S. essentially running Venezuela's oil industry since Maduro's removal, some have speculated that Western involvement in the nation's refining sector could be more successful than what NIORDC was able to accomplish. But making significant improvements there remains a very long-term project, at best, and it's possible that the refineries never return to normal operating levels. In fact, getting Venezuela's refineries back to a reasonable level of utilization, say 75%, may not make much financial sense, even if Venezuela's economy eventually recovers. To do anything more than patch a few crude units, you would need a stable power grid or on-site power and fully reliable utilities, which could take years and significant capital to achieve. After that, you would need to see sustained operation of fluid catalytic cracking units, or FCCs, reformers, hydrotreaters and hydrogen systems, plus fresh catalysts, OEM parts and modern controls, along with disciplined turnaround execution, see turnaround. Years of being shut down or run erratically without proper mothballing mean that restart costs are likely to be very high, in the billions of dollars, and non-linear, often not that different from rebuilding a new refinery from scratch, but without the efficiency or reliability gains that come with a new plant. RBN's Refined Fuels Analytics, or RFA, practice doesn't expect any meaningful short-term progress in improving Venezuela's domestic plants. Utilization is below 20%, and, for now, that is probably as good as it will get. The investments required to effectively rehab the refineries would be better spent upstream to bring back production. In fact, it is more likely that Venezuelan demand could pick up if/when the economy recovers, providing Gulf Coast refiners another Latin American market to supply. This fits well with the forecast in our recently released Future of Fuels report, which expects growing surpluses of refined products coming out of those Gulf Coast plants, see with a little help from my friends. Given that the current liquids demand in Venezuela is more than 500,000 barrels per day below peak 2012 consumption, it has the potential to be a very lucrative market for those barrels. The bottom line is that Venezuela will likely need to continue importing refined products, probably for many years, at increasing rates. The Show Goes On was written by Bruce Hornsby and appears as the first song on side two of his second studio album, Scenes from the South Side. The ballad is about a girl who becomes a victim of those who exploit her, and the show goes on around her in a cycle of bad decisions. The song was featured in Ron Howard's 1991 film Backdraft, the pilot episode of the Baywatch television show, and the premiere episode of season 2 of the comedy-drama series The Bear. Personnel on the record were Bruce Hornsby, lead vocals, keyboards, David Roitstein, synthesizer, George Marinelli, Peter Harris, guitar, backing vocals, Joe Puena, bass, backing vocals, John Molo, drums, and Jeff Gerson, percussion. Scenes from the South Side was recorded in 1987-88 at A&M Studios, Capitol Studios, King Sound Studios, The Grey Room, Ignited Productions, and Rombo Recorders in Los Angeles. Produced by Nell Dortzman and Bruce Hornsby, the album was released in May 1988. It went to number 5 on the Billboard 200 albums charts and has been certified platinum by the Recording Industry Association of America. Two singles were released from the LP. Bruce Hornsby is an American singer-songwriter and pianist. He started performing with cover bands in Virginia and got his first professional break playing in Sheena Easton's touring band in 1984. Bruce Hornsby and The Range were signed to RCA Records and released their debut studio album, The Way It Is, in April 1986. That album went 3x platinum and won the Grammy Award for Best New Artist in 1987. Hornsby has released 10 studio albums, 4 live albums, 3 compilation albums and 25 singles and has won 5 ASCAP Pop Music Awards and 3 Grammy Awards. He toured with the Grateful Dead from 1990 to 1992 and released a bluegrass project with Ricky Skaggs in 2007. He still records and tours. His next album, Indigo Park, will be released in April, followed by a lengthy tour of the U.S. with his band, The Noisemakers.
Thanks for listening to the RBN Daily Energy Blogcast. For more information on energy market reports, maps, and consulting engagements, please visit us at rbnenergy.com. And thanks for rocking with us.